Sorry, long gentleman. Apologies here for us being a little organized.
But that was something. Yeah, big deal going on.
Chris, I've seen your name in the ballot before you ran. You ran 2 years ago, didn't you?
Six.
What do you mean you ran 6 years ago?
98.
No, really?
You okay.
No, I'm not kidding.
In 98, you got 1.1% of the vote then, huh?
1.1.
Well,
are these things supposed to encourage me or what?
I'm just trying to encourage you. It's my job.
No, he did much better than that in 98.
Okay. It's been an interesting seat over the years. If you look at the numbers, the only time Anna has ever had a real challenge, it wasn't even a challenge, was in 92. When she got 56.6%, and Ben Brink.
Was that 92?
92 is when she got elected.
She ran against Ben Brink?
No, she got 92. No, she ran against, oh, you mean she 96. Ran Tom Heuney. She ran against Heuney, 92. Yeah. Brink she ran against in 94 and 96. Yeah. And then I don't remember the person in 98.
It was me.
Was it you?
It was me, and then it was Qureshi.
Qureshi, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you got 28.4% of the vote in 98.
Mm-hmm. Makes me feel a little better.
And then we had Qureshi, and then Joe Nixon last year, who pulled in a big 28%. And then the Libertarians, and I hate to tell you how bad that's been over the years. Well, you have it in your website, actually.
Yeah.
I visited your site.
I got the numbers. Yeah.
And the Libertarian... Okay, 98 got 1.1%. 2000 doubled that almost to 2%.
Could have gotten 30%.
Oh, well, you know.
In 2003, the Libertarian hit 3.5%. Now, at this rate, the Libertarian would be able to win this race by the end of the century.
Oh,
if they continue at that pace.
No, I was hoping you hear you say 2050 or maybe something that I had a shot at, but now I'm bummed.
Well, look,
where is this going?
Yeah, where is this? Hey, look, here's what I'm going to do. I appreciate you making some time to visit with them. We do think this
Likewise.
Is important, even though the numbers would obviously say that you probably don't stand a chance, and I don't think we're editorializing and saying that, but we want to hear where you're coming from, mm-hmm. what your point of view is, and we'll ask some basic questions, and then we'll... And just also some kind of unique questions to this particular race. I want to ask each of you guys how many votes that you're going to get, and why are you even spending your time doing this? That would be another good question, I think. I'm sure you have a good answer for that. And then we'll obviously get all the background
my wife asks.
You want to get started?
Yeah,
ask the first one.
Well, it sounds like you were going the right direction already.
Okay. Well, let me get started here by asking you each... why should a voter give their vote to you, and it's almost throwing it away, since the odds are that unless Anna Eshoo dies or something, neither of you probably are going to beat her. Incumbents win 98% of the time, no fault of either of you. That's kind of it is.
That's the figure I've been using.
Yeah, that's kind of how it works out over the years. So let me start with you, Brian, first, and tell me why should I as a voter even... cast my vote in your direction.
Oh, my answer is that your vote isn't about tipping the outcome of the election. If you run the statistics, you've got a better chance of winning the lottery or being hit by lightning than actually being one vote that decides the outcome of the election. I mean, even if you were, then there would be a recount and they would find some chads or something, and then you wouldn't be the deciding vote anyway. So I mean, anyone who thinks that their vote is going to tip the outcome of the election is just deluding themselves. So my answer is just your vote is for standing up for what you believe, and if you vote for something that you don't want and you get it, that's probably worse voting for something that you do want and not get it.
Okay, fair enough. Same question, Chris.
Yeah, well, it just seems really strange to even ask that about throwing your vote away. We're obligated by the way this country is set up and by the trust that's been placed in us to elect people that will, when they take the oath of office to uphold the Constitution, mean it. And we've got to do whatever we can to get people in there like that. And we're in a spot right now through some, whatever the history of the situation is, that we have a representative that's not doing that. And we have two choices. One is to completely give up on the whole thing and say, well, let's just give it to her time after time after time, which is voting, I'd say, for evil. or to get in there and give it a good fight.
Okay,
and
now,
and we may not be able to do everything, we may not be able to win, but we can do anything if we don't give it a shot. And
Can we follow on that? With Anna Eshoo, I mean, evil is wild, well, very strong, of course. I'd like to ask both of you what exactly is wrong with what she's done.
Yeah, what do you mean by evil?
Okay, well, the concept of just letting that go when somebody, that was too strong a word probably, letting it go, when somebody is voting against what you consider are the principles that should be functioning in this government, a huge proportion of the time, you got to get in there and fight that. You can't send that person back again time after time.
Well, what do you mean? You said she's voting for evil. When you
Can we get rid of that word? I'm sorry I said that.
Well,
and
said
I'll probably do that now and then. If you're just wrong.
I didn't hear you calling her that. What you said is when you give up on the whole thing, that's voting for evil.
Yeah.
So are you saying that by voting for Eshoo, you're kind of giving up on all of your principles? Is that?
Yeah. Oh, and not voting and just saying giving her a pass on that is doing that too. All the representatives in the Bay Area are doing something right now that is filled with some ideas that I would put in the category of being un-American.
Such as
give over our sovereignty to the United Nations, cut back on our military and let somebody else take care of us. You know, the defense thing, the terrorism, I have three T's, terrorism, taxes, and teachers, is big ones. I also threw in traditional American values.
Okay.
But every single vote that seems to come up by just about all of our Bay Area congressmen, including my own, is something that just does violence to all that. We're supposed to be, their job is to defend our country from those outside who would do us harm. And Anna's record, I want to just say this, that I asked the local Palo Alto newspaper, the weekly, to publish her voting record.
Mm-hmm.
Just back in the early 90s. I wasn't even thinking about running. I just thought, we ought to know how she's voting, because she's voting some pretty strange stuff. And they suggested that I had some agenda for asking that. Does that seem so strange to ask our news media to let people know how our representatives are voting on all these different things that come up?
That's the Palo Alto Weekly. They have a strange agenda to start with.
Yeah.
how many votes will you get in November? You crack 10,000?
Crack 10,000?
Yeah, you think you'll get 10,000?
Oh, yeah.
You think you'll get
10,000? Oh, yeah.
3,000?
Yeah, 30, 40, 50.
Okay, same question for you, Brian.
Oh, I think I'll get like 4%. I think Chris will get like probably the same 20% as he got last time,
20%.
I think. And Anna will get her standard high 60s.
Okay.
It's hard to tell in today's climate what will happen there. All you ever hear about is the presidential race right now.
And as far as what's wrong with Anna, I would say, for me, it's two things. One is you know, I think she has principle. I think they are, she has values and she has ideas about how to best implement those values. And I think it's, the values are, you know, for the most part, okay. I think that her good intentions get in the way of her better sense about how, you know, what the national government should be doing. And in particular, you see this in the kind of debt that the federal government piles up. I mean, my card, you know, I've got a picture of my daughter, and I thought I had done some pretty solid research in estimating, you know, $94,000 worth of you know, government debt and unfunded liability. USA Today came out and basically doubled my numbers, so it looks like I was a little low. I'll have to dig into their numbers and see how they
printed on the card.
Came up with.
Fix that. Yeah.
But so there's this, you know, I think irresistible tendency to the special interests and think that you're doing good by paying them off, and that it's a wonderful system in which by doing good for these special interests you ought to gain, you know, sort of incumbency tenure. And so I think it can subtly corrupt people. Even if they have good intentions.
This is a big issue with both of us that I think people, 98% is an awful thing for returning incumbents like that, because when you are an incumbent for quite a bit of time, your career gets awfully important to you. this is a career thing, and we're a couple citizens, Yahoo and I'm a teacher, and I love my job. I'm not doing this to. You love your job too, don't you?
I don't want to move to Washington.
Yeah, we love our jobs. We're not doing this to make a snazzy career for ourselves. But Anna is a career politician, and I think as such, you learn how to play the game and make sure everything you're in there every single time again.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the game is to you start to feel after a while like you really are hot stuff. I really am important, and everybody should treat me like some kind of a prince or princess, and I know better than people do in our district about how their money ought to be spent. Spending more money from the government, from the federal level, seems fine to Anna, and it's not right.
You're speaking as if you were her, just in case you're taking a quote down. Yeah. I really feel like you can spend the money better for people. Saying that's what she thinks.
But that's what you get down to in that point every time. Let me
ask you seriously: why run when the incumbent wins 98% of the time? You hope to elevate issues so that people think about things. Are you doing it because you have nothing else to do? You both have jobs. So
I want to be able to look my kids in the eye. Yeah. You know, yeah. 30 years down the road, or 10 years down the road, you know, when the entitlement mess makes, you know, the current issues of the day look like, you know, just kid stuff.
Yeah.
I want to be able to say that I stood up, I saw the train wreck coming, and I got on the tracks, and, well, you know, the rest was history. But
isn't there more effective ways to stop the train than running?
I think you do them all. I think that, but to just give her a pass, or to give the incumbent, you know, two-party system a pass, by not putting an alternative in front of people, I think is to send the wrong message.
Will she engage you guys in a debate?
Oh, there have been two already.
And where she's been there?
Yeah.
Well, she phoned in one and attended the other. And I have to hand it to her. I mean, she's a lock for re-election. For her to spend her time, I mean, it was midnight East Coast time when she phoned into this one that had an audience of about nine of whom, you know.
Two of them were her aides.
Yeah. And the others, a lot of the others were LWV volunteers. But she still phoned in and gave her spiel. So I give her credit for that.
Well, do you think, okay, look, let me ask you about term limits for a second. You guys probably both have an opinion on this. When the term limits thing began in the 80s, I was one of these guys that said, hey, yeah, this is a pretty good deal because we could oppose it in Congress. However, it didn't ever happen in Congress because of the courts, and it happened in local government, and I've seen what's happened in local government, and there's certainly one straight thought out there that says that in local government we've chased effective people out of their jobs and created a situation where the staff of city governments or state governments has a hell of a lot of input, whereas, you know, your elected officials have less. So I thought, well, maybe it wasn't such a good idea then for the federal, but I don't know. I really don't know the answer. What do you guys think of federal term limits?
Term limits are anti-democratic to me. I think let the people decide. I think if you're going to put any kind of procedural changes in place, the only kind I would be interested in at all are things that put more information on the table, not less.
Yeah, there we go.
Print the number of the amount of a candidate's contributions next to their name on the ballot, maybe, or put some kind of a threshold where everyone says they hate Congress but they love their congressman. So maybe have a up or down vote on Congress and how good a job they're doing, and incumbent only gets to go back if they can beat that threshold. You know, so but basically, you know, get the voters to look in the mirror and say, you know, if you hate Congress and love your congressperson, you're part of the problem. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, too many people are so ready to blame politicians or the system or bureaucrats or whatever, but voters need to step up and shoulder some of the blame.
Let me ask you a Republican question. if I was running for Congress as a Republican here, what I would tell people is I'd run as a liberal Republican, okay? Mm-hmm. Endorse all the values they have and all the beliefs they have, but I'd say, look, folks, we're getting ripped off here in California. 75% out of every federal dollar that we get back, we pay a dollar to Washington, we get 75 cents back. And the reason why is...
Where did that come from? Bill Jones says that, too, and I've been saying that 73 years ago.
It came out of...
Tax Foundation had something.
No, it did not come out of the Tax Foundation. I can find it. Tom Elias is a columnist of mine.
Because I find it hard to believe that even that much comes back.
Well, anyway, the point is this. Is that why not establish a beachhead in the Republican Party of liberal Republicans to kind of embrace the Bay Area so that we quit getting ripped off by Republicans in Washington who say, we're not giving any money for anything in the Bay Area because we don't like all those folks, so they don't vote with us. Mm-hmm. And so instead of fighting the Republican Party here in the Bay Area, why don't we put a bunch of liberal Republicans on the ballot and try and take over the party rather than continuing to fight the party through the Democratic Party, which is a vessel that, at this point, does not control Congress, neither the House or the Senate, doesn't have the Supreme Court, doesn't have the White House, doesn't have a majority of state legislatures, and doesn't have a majority of governorship. And at a certain point, you got to say, let's give up on the Democrats and move in with Republicans and see if we can make waves within that party. And as a Republican, I think that would be a really strong argument to make here, because Anna can't point to anything that she's ever brought back to the district. I mean, very little. I mean, what has she done in terms of highway funds in our district? Zilch.
Yeah.
That's good. She got $1.5 million for Bear Island. Big fucking deal.
I don't want federal money coming here. I think you're a libertarian. Well, no, I think it's just a disgrace. It's a disgrace for us to sit here in any district and to say, what can this the country, how can we squeeze money out of them?
How about we get our own money back?
Well, if we stop sending it there, then we don't have to worry about the issue.
Yeah. So. Okay. We send money to Washington D.C. Back it comes. $150,000 for a children's library in Palo Alto. Now, where does that come from? What's a children's library in Palo Alto have to do with any national priorities? That money, if that money had been kept here, it would have taken less money out of our pockets, and we could have had the children's library the way we wanted. It comes back with federal strings, too.
Yeah. But don't you think the folks in the Bay Area are missing out because we don't have
kids? Well, the issues that are important to us, I think that is true. Because we keep sending back Anna and Mike Honda and Zoe Lofgren all the time, Silicon Valley's got, and all they spend their time doing, every time you see Anna on TV, she's just bashing Bush right and left.
Right.
And bashing the Republicans.
When was the last time we got a federal contract in her district?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's not much that's going
to
happen there.
Have you been over to Lockheed Martin recently? There's nobody there. Yeah. It's a ghost town.
Why should Congress or the administration say, what can we do to help you?
Yeah, and now we're going to lose the Air National Guard in Moffitt.
Yep,
well,
yep.
They're waiting until after the election, but the Air National Guard is going to go probably, and Anna's arguing that they should keep it. Why does anybody in the Pentagon listen to Anna Eshoo?
Yeah, yeah.
She's on the wrong side. So I'm thinking, well, I'm making your arguments for you, but the point is I'm not hearing you make these arguments, and I've read what you've written so far, and it's like, this isn't your pitch. And I'm thinking to myself, that's the pitch a Republican makes.
He's more aggressive than that, I think.
Is that a Republican pitch?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The Republican platform is saying that we are for, I mean, Brian's given my pitch most of the time.
Yeah.
He's saying that we are for government that's supposed to be within the limits of propriety here with the Constitution.
But you don't have a president that thinks that way. You have a president that spends like crazy.
I know that.
Exactly.
I know that. You think I'm a... Anna is...
Well, I mean,
the
leader of your party, the titular head of your party is George Bush, and he spends like crazy, right? He spends
Drunk
like
and sailor,
every Democrat that I've ever seen, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't really say, well, gee, my party's different from the other guys. No, you're the same.
Hey, we have this No Child Left Behind Act.
Yeah.
And President Bush got that thing through the Congress here. I would have voted no on it.
Okay.
I would have voted no on that, and Anna Eshoo voted no on it.
Yeah.
Entirely different reasons.
Yeah, what were your reasons?
She voted on it because it didn't spend enough money and have enough hooks into everybody.
Are you talking about the appropriations on that, or are you talking about the bill itself?
Yeah,
the bill and appropriations are two separate things.
Yeah, her big argument with the whole thing is that they're not spending enough money.
Okay.
They're controlling education.
But you got to remember, No Child Left Behind was written by people like Ted Kennedy as well as Republicans.
Yeah.
It was bipartisan.
Yeah.
And it kind of come along through the Democratic Clinton administration, actually, mm-hmm. Legislation.
Yeah, well,
it started with Reagan's report, the commission
of Nation at Risk.
Nation at Risk, right.
Yeah. Gold 1000.
Yeah. Right.
There's a whole pedigree of this federal intervention in education. Yeah. It's all entirely wrong-headed.
Growing and growing and growing. Yeah. And what we can decide for our own schools here close to home gets to be less and less and less.
Yeah.
And it's one size fits all. They want to control what the content is going to be in every kid. And Lincoln said that whoever controls the schools of this generation controls the government, determines the government of the next.
So you think the federal government ought to be public schools, right?
Entirely.
Constitutionally, it should be.
Both agree on that.
Yeah. Practically,
the state should have vouchers. Let people.
The federal government is lousy at it. They've got control of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Look what they've done.
Yeah.
And Palo Alto, that's where I live, people are moving in there and hawking their souls to buy a house in Palo Alto so they can go to the Palo Alto School District. Yeah. And the No Child Left Behind Act came out that the Palo Alto schools after the testing was below standards.
Escondido. Escondido, one school, and it's because they didn't get, they need 75% of the kids from certain ethnic subgroups to take a test. And in one group, there wasn't enough kids. It was like 92%.
They didn't make enough progress.
Because a family of eight was brought here by Stanford, a family of eight from Brazil, I think it was, and so they fit into one of these subgroups nicely. And then the mom and dad said, we're not letting our kids take this test. So they didn't reach the 95% threshold, and that's why Escondido's on the bad list. I did write an editorial though, saying, hey, look, get your act together. This is, you know, if this testing is going to work, we have to test all the kids. You can't cherry pick them. That's the way it kind of looked to me.
That's their argument. If parents are smart enough to figure out what school district is the best one, and to do, you know, pick a different house and a different address based on that, then parents can be trusted to pick a school, you know, by spending a voucher. So I mean, I don't understand the opposition to vouchers. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, special interest teachers union, you know, kind of civil servant thing. But and then the other half of it is probably kind of a nanny state, you know, paternalism idea that there's a class of people that can't be trusted to look out for their kids' best interests. But I think if you look at what people will do to get themselves into the right school district, you know, fake addresses, you know, all this kind of stuff, I think the evidence is contrary to that.
Okay. What do you guys think about, let me break down a little big national issues and get your opinions on this. What do you think about our prosecution of the war in Iraq?
Well, I think, as we saw from the debate, there's really not much difference between what Kerry wants to do there. You know, now that we're in on the at the national level, aside from, like, you know, some fringe parties like the Libertarians who just want us to cut and run, the major players don't have much difference in what we should do to get out. I think there's significant differences in, you know, how, whether, you know, whether to get in. And if time to travel were available, that would be an interesting thing to make an election issue on. But you know, it's now pretty obvious what we need to do to extricate ourselves, you know, while trying to leave the situation as stable as possible. Kerry says we need a summit. We need to seal the borders. Those were like the only two differences I could see him actually making with Bush there. So I think the real issue now that we have to keep our eye on is not so much, you know, how we stabilize things in Iraq, but you know, keep an eye on the nuclear weapons in Pakistan and what might be coming in Iran. I mean, compared to, you know, car bombings in Fallujah, you know, it's what we need to care about is a nuclear device that might get snuck into the mall in D.C. or into Manhattan. And, you know, everything else is pretty much, you know, penny ante.
One of the things, Libertarians don't believe in much government, but you do believe in a national defense.
Yes.
And do you think that going into Iraq was to defend our country or to defend anything that we hold valuable?
The party is very clear. We believe in national defense and no national offense, as our candidate puts it. I differ a little bit with the standard party line on this in that I don't think that the government's role of defending human liberty ends completely at our borders. I think that that we have an interest in, you know, if tyranny threatens freedom anywhere, then free people, I think, are threatened everywhere. So I would say that if the case rises to it, then go in and do some regime change. And Saddam was a guy who had invaded two countries, killed a million or two people, lobbed ballistic missiles at two other neighbors, had violated UN Security Council rule sanctions on disarmament. So I think that that you can make a case for going in there and get rid of the guy purely on kind of a, you know, humanitarian justice kind of case. So I'm actually kind of glad that they didn't find any WDs, because now you've got Bush standing up, you know, mouthing things about freedom and democracy that he wouldn't have been talking about at all if we'd found a few canisters of nerve gas in there.
Well, let me put you in another corner, and I'll ask you more questions in a second, but about the Patriot Act, you know, there's a lot of folks who defend it, say, look, this is a way of defending ourselves by trying to find the people in this country who have infiltrated our country who are going to hurt us. And so that's the purpose of the Patriot Act, and to be able to get all their money and stop them from being able to use their money to hurt us. And then, of course, there's the civil libertarian view, and that is that rights are being taken away with the Patriot Act. Where do you fall on that?
I think the Patriot Act is heading totally down in the wrong direction. I don't think that it contributes. I haven't heard of a single case, a terrorism case, that the Patriot Act helped crack. But on the other hand, though, I think that there's a lot of, you know, we people who care about civil liberty have a reflex that we say the sky is falling as soon as anything starts going in the wrong direction in this country, which is the freest country on Earth and in the history of Earth. You know, we're going to fix this. Everyone is embarrassed now who voted for the Patriot Act. And I throw the whole thing out and start over, but I don't think this guy's falling on this issue.
Okay, same questions about the prosecution of the war in Iraq, then I'll let you talk about the Patriot Act.
Yeah, it seems a kind of interesting thing that I've noticed here recently is that we've changed the focus from the war on terror to the war in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the thing here. After 9/11, where we were attacked in 9/11, right after that, the radical is whoever these guys are, radical Islamists or whatever tool we give to them, but it's a loose network and they're not a country, but there's a bunch of people that have some goals that are fairly clear of what they're trying to do, and they're big goals, and bringing down the United States is certainly one of them. But they didn't expect us to do anything right after that, after Clinton's performance with Somalia and other places. They really did expect us to do anything. So this is a major shift in United States posture there that Bush would mount up the cavalry and charge in there and take it to them in Afghanistan and just do serious stuff and then. Now Bush is caught in a tough spot there. We got Saddam Hussein here, who's flagrantly doing what he did with the UN resolutions. And at that point, we had Kerry, we had even Anna Eshoo saying there should be regime change, mm-hmm. voting for things like this. So all this stuff's happening. So everybody, based on everything everybody knew right then, and I can't even understand what this thing. I always had the feeling that we don't know enough stuff to be able to make any more than a knee-jerk reaction on things, people. The weapons of mass destruction, why wouldn't he let everybody in there really to really inspect them if he didn't have them? And
you're asking the wrong guy.
And we had him sitting there warning him we're coming for so long, he had plenty of time to ship them somewhere else, and nobody's even watching the borders to see what's getting shipped out. Store them somewhere else for a while. And France, Germany, and Russia with a food for oil program further muddy the waters here. So we're not getting straight scoop on an awful lot of stuff here. But with every information that President Bush had here, he was caught between a rock and a hard place.
Sounds like President Bush didn't get the right information either. I mean,
well,
do you think he would possibly want to risk his presidency? I mean, he's told by the CIA that WMDs are there, so he thinks they're there. And he gets in, they're not there. And it's like
him.
I mean, he's not the only. We're not the only one getting the bad information. It looks like
now CNS.
Kerry got the same bad information.
CNS News Service yesterday published something that they've got memos and things saying there really was translated. They discovered memos translated that says there really was nerve gas and anthrax there in the year 2000.
I think it was the New York Times that said that. But Dan Rather hasn't authenticated those documents yet. So
okay.
I don't know. How about the Patriot Act?
But Iraq is probably an important part of the whole, establishing a beachhead there mm-hmm. for something other than a rogue state in the Middle East is, and that is attracting all the junk here. There's a battle being fought there. But the soldiers that I met, maybe five soldiers at the county fairs here, and when I found out they just came back from Iraq, I just said, tell me something, tell me anything,
yeah,
just tell me something. And one guy said, I've always been a Democrat, and I went over there, I didn't know what I was going for, and when I got over there, I found out why, and I would go back, and we're doing very important stuff there, and that's the attitude our soldiers have, and. I'm going to support them,
okay.
100% here. And Ashley wouldn't even sign a resolution supporting the troops.
What so, resolution was that?
Oh, there was one that a couple months ago that our friend over in the East Bay, Congressman
If you're going to make an accusation like that, you ought to know what it is.
Well, yeah, I don't have that.
I mean, if we had her here, she'd say, of course I support the troops. What do you say?
We got an email from her right after the no vote on that, saying that she didn't support it because it didn't mention all these bad things.
Okay.
And our who's congressman over in Fremont, the Pete Stark?
Yeah. Well, he's actually North Bay, but yeah.
No. He's down there, Pete Stark. Yeah. It was the same one that he got into trouble
for. I was thinking Barbara Lee.
Yeah. Well, she's another.
Yeah. Ellen Talisher?
Yeah. He says the Constitution's like my old blue dress. It sometimes just doesn't fit anymore. But Pete Stark got voted no on that thing, and then a soldier called him about it, and he called back the soldier's voicemail machine. And did you hear about that one?
No.
Yeah, he called and left a message on his voicemail machine and said that I just got this fax from you, and I wonder who really wrote this, because you probably aren't even smart enough to spell the words in it. And so I'm going to call you back.
Jesus.
I'm going to call you back, and then you can talk to me and tell me why you think you're such a goddamn hero.
Wow, I have not heard that.
And it even got on national news. They had a report
of it. I have some vague memory of that. Yeah. It was he said that later, this is someone, he thought it was someone who had been harassing him or something. That was his, if I'm remembering.
Yes, yeah, fine. But the...
Well, he has a reputation as a drunk, so...
Yeah, maybe that might be the thing,
yeah.
It was that resolution that she voted no on, too, and...
Wait, he wouldn't vote for a resolution that supported the troops, and you're saying that's a bad... You should have done that, huh?
Well, I'd like to see a history of some supportive things.
Okay.
but certainly not there.
Okay. Do you think that we should remain in Iraq?
The president has a plan, and... You know, I have the notion of making a democracy out of Iraq has always bothered me somewhat. Go in there. We have a rich heritage and some ideas here in the country about what's supposed to happen with a representative government, and people in a country like that have been just living under a dictator telling them what to do all the time. That's quite a shift.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a faith in the inner yearnings of the human soul to be free. And
you're talking about Bush?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps talking about that. And I'm not sure I have the same faith in that for seeing that happen in the near future. But he's going on a timetable there that he's going to have them have elections and things like that.
Before we think of all the time here, because we got to move on to another thing.
Yeah.
What about Patriot Act?
Well, I'm not quite sure what happens there. That's a big, thick one. And my understanding of some of the things, I know there's some things that we're getting worked up about here right now, but my understanding of some of those things were as innocuous as to get a wiretap on a crook who's doing some bad crime, just normal American crime.
We already have a law that allows that.
We have wiretaps that allow that. And we also have some kind of wiretaps that allow them to go after somebody who's bona fide foreign spy. But there's no connection for if somebody is going after a crook and hears him talking about foreign spy stuff, we're not allowed to share that information with the other side of the thing. And so the Patriot Act did.
You're talking about the FBI and the CIA communicating with one another.
And the Patriot Act did make the connections there, so that you could get an all-purpose wiretap.
How about picking up people who aren't U.S. citizens and jailing them with hearings that aren't public?
I'm sorry, but that's just out of the realm of my experience here.
Okay.
So far, And, you know, it's kind of a wild
thing. So, you don't think it's a good idea, or you think it's a good idea?
No, I don't know. I just don't know about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to get up to speed on as many things as fast as I can, but that's one that...
How about in Patriot Act, no-knock searches, as they call them, that is, where normally in a search, they present the search warrant to the person being searched, but under the Patriot Act, what's allowed is for the cops or law enforcement to be able to go into your house, do the search, not present the warrant to you at that time, but present it to you at some point in the future. In other words, they can burglarize your house and then burglars may be too strong, but they can go into your house, do whatever they want to do, leave, you never know they were there, and then at a date in the future that was decided by a judge, you can be presented with your search warrant. What do you think of that idea?
Well, is that in there?
That's part of the Patriot.
Okay, where do I find that in there?
Well, I don't know what page you find that in there, but that's in there, yeah.
Well, I said,
sounds good. No, I mean, it's something that U.S. attorneys have debated as to, you know, they U.S. attorneys across the country have said, have talked about
what's the point here?
Do you like that idea or don't?
Well, that didn't sound like a good idea to me.
It sounds suspicious. I mean, it's reassuring to hear that there's a judge involved. You're not talking about an ex post facto kind of warrant where, you know, let's rewrite it after we find something or don't find something or plant something. But I just don't know of any evidence that the current search warrant regime is not, you know, is letting terrorists fall through the cracks. You know, I mean,
In other words, we got laws now to take care of this. Yeah. Why do we need Patriot?
Right. Now, as I understand it, I mean, like you mentioned wiretaps, I think actually they write some of these laws kind of, you know, a little too specifically. I think, didn't the Patriot Act update the wiretap rules to cover, like, email or something? And a lot of people got, you know, out of joint
and
about
cell
that.
Cell phones.
Yeah.
Or but, you know, change his phone.
So there's some updating that can happen to some of these laws, you know, that probably should happen. But you know, if you bundle it together with anything that is as, you know, lame as, like, this one ruling that just came out about you can be told by the government not to talk to any lawyer when you're, you know, involved in a Patriot Act investigation. And that's just, that's like, you know, well, I'm not going to invoke any kind of Nazi analogies because that's silly, but... It's just stupid.
Okay, let's talk about tax policy.
I've never heard of some of those things that are in there that keep coming up. Every time you hear about it, somebody's got a new one.
Yeah, and that's the problem with the Act.
Well, there isn't exactly a clearinghouse for federal information on either because, you know, reporters have been thwarted in trying to find, you know, bring all that together. But let me ask you about tax policy. We just passed our fourth tax cut. It's on Bush's desk now. It was just passed by Congress last week. This one targeted more middle-income earners, and we've had three previous to this. What do you think of the idea of the tax cuts and overall tax policies? What changes would you make, I guess, in a big sense, if you were on the Ways and Means Committee and got to do all that kind of
sense.
Stuff? Yeah. What would you do?
Well, a big sense would be great to cut them quite a bit.
Okay.
Evidently,
they
you're in the wrong party.
Evidently, they figure it costs something like over $200 billion a year just to comply with the tax code.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was it 7 million words? 17,000 pages. Every time you go to all the studies where they go try to ask the IRS employees to give them the answers to questions get about 50%.
That's why we have accountants.
Yeah.
That's why they have such nice offices.
And tax lawyers.
Yeah.
Now, I think they should move towards flattening the tax, simplifying the tax code, making sure there's a nice, big, juicy exemption so that the working poor, you know, don't even have to worry about income tax. And also move more towards consumption, taxing consumption rather than, you know, income. Now, I don't think I would do it through like a, you know, European style, you know, value added tax.
Yeah.
But maybe, an income tax where you are allowed to deduct as much as you want for, you know, an IRA or for investments, that kind of thing. And so then what you get left over is your tax on.
That's different from a flat tax. Flat tax is a real flat tax.
Right. The flat tax is about the rates and the brackets, and then the consumption versus income and investment has to do with what's deductible and what's not. And I would move more towards taxing consumption and flattening the rates.
Well, let me make a really exotic argument to you that somebody knows a lot more about taxes than I do makes. I fell into AMT a couple of years ago. Are you guys in AMT?
No.
AMT is basically a flat tax, but it's like this, and as inflation increases, it's going to snarl more and more people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in a couple of years, like half of America is going to be under AMT. Mm-hmm. And AMT means you don't get any more deductions.
Mm-hmm.
It just like that. And it was supposed to get billionaires when they adopted in 1969, it applies to a hell of a lot of Americans. And I'm thinking, isn't AMT just another form of flat tax?
Well, they definitely need to, you know, index to inflation every you know, tax bracket in the system. And I think they, to a certain extent, they do that. They do that.
Well, they do, except for AMT. That's the only exception.
Yeah, that may be the only exception, because I thought that they'd already indexed, you know, the brackets and the deductions and whatnot, which is why the deductions are always a weird amount every year, you know. But if that's the case, then they definitely should index AMT.
Have you, other aspects of tax policy here real quick, do you think we should be giving deductions for people for business purposes, such as, let's say, I buy a 6,000-pound SUV, and I own a business. In fact, that applies to me, so I'm going to get a really nice tax deduction on that vehicle. Is that fair?
I think that all these things sound like just loopholes to me. I think I like the idea of, you know, doing your taxes on a postcard. And there wouldn't be room on a postcard to talk about your SUVs or your three marching lunches or whatever. So I'd be happy to see deductions like that go out the window.
Good enough.
You can go down the list of a lot of things that aren't fair, and if they would be solved by the postcard thing. Mm-hmm. Right now, I figured it out what it would cost for my taxes a couple years ago if my wife and I weren't married. It costs us $1,100 a year to be married.
Yeah, right. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. It's not funny. Because whatever you tax, you discourage. So it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny social policy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we're trying to encourage couples to get married, and we have this tax policy that does exactly the opposite. And then we pay billions of dollars really to support single-parent families. Mm-hmm. What? Isn't it funny? I mean, the tax thing is crazy. You know,
evidently, on this last thing, last week or two, when the House voted for it, Anna voted for things like that. To get rid of it. But she's never done that before.
The other thing I would do with tax policy is what the economists and the eggheads call internalizing externalities. I mean, you know, Al Gore got beat up for his idea of a carbon tax, but I think the in there is the nugget of a good idea, which is that, you know, if people are engaged in activities that put costs on people who aren't involved in the transaction, then we should then the smart way to deal with that kind of problem is not to write rules about, okay, GM, your fleet of cars has to meet this many miles per gallon. Instead, figure out what the damage is that's being done for each gallon of gas, and then plug that in to the cost of it with a tax, and do that, you know. You can do the similar things with like emissions trading and you know, as instead of like, you know, telling you that each, you know, smokestack has to have exactly this kind of equipment in it, just, you know, let these guys you know, impose a cost on the polluters that's equivalent to the damage they're doing, and then let them, you know, maximize their profits and figure out the most efficient way to bring the
how's that consistent with the flat tax or doing it on a postcard?
Well, this is a sales tax on gas, or, you know, emissions trading, where you have a license to emit so many, you know, tons of nitrous oxide. You know,
so who pays those taxes?
Well, because people who buy gas would pay the gas tax.
Operators.
People who you know, run factories that pollute would pay that. But basically, polluters.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts on taxes?
Well, they're too high.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think of this? Bush cut dividends taxes, and capital gains are the lowest in my lifetime now, 15%. So those are a couple of things. But we didn't see elimination of the death tax, and the death tax still remains.
They cut that.
They cut it, but it's
still at 65% or something, isn't it?
Oh my.
I mean, it's really high. It was, I could be wrong in the number.
Yeah, but I agree. It's confiscatory, and in fact, I'm philosophically really bugged by the idea of taxes on properties or estates, or, you know, that's a function of your net worth, because with a tax on transactions and income, the worst they can do, if they dial it up to 100%, the worst they can do is, okay, I'll just stop working. But if they have property taxes or estate taxes, if they dial that up to 100%, you've got, you know, communism. So I'm really scared of any taxes where it gives them a dial where all they do is a flick of the wrist, and all of a sudden, you know, we have a
Marxist
society.
And if we elect people without
society.
Any control, they'll do that.
Which gets back to your point at the beginning about throwing our votes away. And, exactly. Have you noticed anything that NSU has done in terms of taxes that is positive?
Voted to do away with the marriage penalty, extend the marriage penalty.
She voted to extend the marriage penalty.
She voted. The vote was to extend the exclusion of it.
Yeah, I personally don't follow her voting record because Congress does a very good job of making sure that there's that you can vote, you know, any which way on any election, on any issue,
yeah.
and make sure that you can cite like six votes on this side of it and six yeah. votes on that side, yeah. whether it's amendments yeah. or tables or motions or, you know, you name it. So I just look at you know, what they stand for, the direction they're taking us, mm-hmm. and, you know, which way they're pulling the wagon. And she's clearly pulling in the wrong way.
Yeah. You know, one committee she sits on is intelligence.
Yes, that's something, isn't it?
Well, you want to talk about that for a minute? I mean, what... And by the way, she sits in the Gary Condit seat. You know, Gary Condit was kicked off the committee. So she sits in the Gary Condit seat. I don't know. I asked her about that one time, and she defended him, and this is before he was actually out of office.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So
yeah.
That was interesting, too. But tell me about a Congress member of Congress who's on intelligence. Do they have any special responsibilities or duties or anything that you see that she should be doing?
That's a good question. I'd have to think about that.
Okay.
Certainly, you know, she shouldn't, you know, shouldn't leak, you know, sensitive information. It's always interesting, and sometimes it's you know, gratifying to hear people who have this kind of inside information then come out in front of a microphone and say, "There's nothing in there that, you know, gives us evidence for blah." So I'm not aware of anything, you know, particularly egregious that she's doing in this
okay.
area.
Yeah, I'm seeing her. She's been on TV a couple times where she, one time was talking with Duff Sunheim,
right
here, and she spent the whole time bashing Bush. And I think being on the Intelligence Committee, you ought to try to downplay the whole political hysteria business and really show that you're more concerned about defending the country than about all these other things. She has voted in the past to make our intelligence budget an open book thing. The spending of the intelligence budget had some secret components to it. She wants to get all that out there, let everybody know.
You think that's a bad idea to make it open book?
I'm not sure, but I don't trust her motives on it.
Okay.
Some of that secret for good reasons.
Okay.
I like to have her see her have a real commitment to America's security rather than the political grandstanding. And even after 9/11, she sends out a letter and government franked letter to her whole constituents, just telling us how hard she's working to defend us. And I haven't seen it.
Well, I wouldn't question her commitment to defending the country. I think. Everybody, you know, in Washington takes, you know, the defense of the country seriously, and I think that they can have the wrong idea about how to approach it, or maybe the wrong balance in terms of you know, what the threats are and stuff. But to me, both parties in Washington are working equally hard to make hay out of these national security issues, and I wouldn't get in that game.
What about at Moffett Field? Do you have any opinions about whether the Air National Guard unit should remain at Moffett Field or move to the Central Valley, as has been discussed?
My opinion is that I don't trust someone whose job depends on the local voters here to come up with an objective evaluation of the country's need as far as you know, where this air rescue wing or whatever, you know, should be based.
Well, she couldn't be lobbying then for that?
It depends. If she actually has you know, an objective case to be made, maybe the one that could be backed up with, you know, taxpayer interest groups that aren't, you know, tied to this district, then sure, you know, she should be heard. But I'm just real suspicious of politicians in Washington, because, you know, I've heard that they look out, you know, they bend backwards for their district, and it's not a good thing.
Yeah, and Byrd from West Virginia is particularly good at it.
Well, I'm just curious. Yeah. You said that a couple times. You seem to feel that the job of a representative doesn't include lobbying for bringing money into the district and things
right.
like that.
Pork. I wouldn't lift a finger to bring pork to the district.
Who is it that the representative should be working for?
They should have the national interests at heart. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be trying to you know, extort the taxpayers from the other 434 districts just to benefit the taxpayers of California 14. And if California 14 voters don't agree with that, they shouldn't vote for it.
She raises an excellent question. As, let's say all 434 other people are fighting like crazy for their own districts, and you're not. Does that mean you're going to get taken advantage of?
The advantage that's being taken of, if you look at the numbers, it's all about entitlements. And that stuff is not on a per district basis. And we're talking about, you know, chump change when it compares to the you know, $94,000 that my daughter owes. You know, the per district pork is probably in the three figures, hundreds, maybe a thousand.
Well, you know as well as I do, you can go to congressional districts where there have been long-term members of Congress, and you find zillions of federal facilities. Yeah. And lots of federal
named
contracts.
After the Congressman.
Oh yeah. I mean where I grew up, I grew up across the bayou from the Pascagoula shipyard where Trent Lott gets destroyers built that the government doesn't need, you know. And I was a gung-ho Republican and you know, I thought, well, you know, a few extra destroyers, you know, can't hurt. But it's just wrong, you know. And just cuz everyone else is doing something that's wrong, I don't think I wouldn't do it for that reason.
Okay, fair enough. Same question really.
Yeah. There's a guy running for Senate from Oklahoma, Tom Colburn, who wrote a book called Redress. When he was in the class of 94, he went back there, and those guys promised that the Contract of America, that they were going to do a job. He ran on national issues, and they got a lot of them elected. On national issues, they made promises of what they would do, and one of the things was that they would leave after 6 years.
Yeah.
And he just points out how it gets to you after a while. You start to soak it up, and so many of the guys got sucked into that.
Some left, though.
Couldn't leave, yeah.
Steve Largent left.
Yeah, he left.
Guinness left.
Yeah, he left.
Well,
see, those are guys with some principle. But the last couple of years, he was there on all these appropriation bills like this, the things where every congressman is, given, if they're a good congressman, if they're a nice, well-behaved congressman, are given millions of dollars to spend in their local districts to help ensure longevity.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
The children's library. And the underpass for the pedestrian bicycles.
But you know what, I mean, honestly, do you think that that's the kind of thing that ensures honest longevity? Because those are crumbs, aren't they? I mean,
it's the kind of crumbs they brag about, and it's the kind of thing that you're asking, you know, how come she's not doing more? So I would worry about it.
Do a favor for this.
Okay.
I'd like to see a line item veto. I think the Supreme Court was right in throwing out the law the way it was written, and it would probably need a constitutional amendment to do it right. But I think it would be really important for the president to have that, because he's the only one with the national standing to say, you know, okay, this list of things are all special interest local projects. Let's cut them all.
If Bush would veto something.
Yes.
But Colburn introduced 100 amendments in the appropriation bills.
Okay.
100 of them.
Yeah.
X-ing out this and that. You know.
The cutouts of those pork barrels.
Yeah, I thought that was silly.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. Well, I got some of the basics for you guys. I know we go on and on here. I mean, I could ask you about the highway bill, but I won't. You know. Is there anything else we didn't cover here that we ought to talk about?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of agreeing between me and Chris, but...
Yeah. What do you disagree?
Yeah. Basically, for me, it's social issues. It's issues having to do with people's control over the substances and sensations that they use. The libertarian idea is that grown-ups, as long as they don't hurt anybody else, should be left to do and play as they please.
So, like, sincere for, like, legalization of marijuana?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, what if somebody, I mean, here's the problem. I mean, a lot of people in our area, I think, would probably lean toward libertarians, except for that drug thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and they say, well, you know, drug thing is the reason why I wouldn't want to be a libertarian, because I don't want my kids doing drugs, and I think it's a bad thing for them to do that. Other than that, they're probably cool with the concept of a smaller government and more individual rights.
Well, you know, but there's the alcohol thing and the cigarette thing. I mean, we trust the government to keep alcohol and cigarettes out of the hands of our kids, and the government does a reasonable job of that. I would think the government could do, in fact, I would much more trust 7-Eleven not to give, joints to people underage, and I would trust the neighborhood drug dealer. You know, I think if you put it out into the economy, tax it, and police it, you're going to actually have a better results than if you keep it in the black market.
And some libertarians don't believe in public schools. Are you in public schools or not?
I don't see any need for federal involvement in education. I don't think You know, I can see the elementary school that my daughter is going to attend. I can see it from my backyard. There's no need for tax dollars to take a 6,000-mile round trip to the U.S. Treasury just to come back and fund that school. But I think that market reform, you know, education is an industry that the government has no special advantage in, and I would rather see the tax dollars that go to public schools be collected, give back to parents in the form of vouchers, and let them spend it at King's Academy, or let there be a whole, you know, put some competitive pressure on King's Academy. You know, I'd love to see kind of a you know, we had the dot.
That's your school, right, Chris?
Exactly. Yeah. There was a dot-com boom. I think if we had an aggressive voucher program, there would be like a dot edu boom where, you know, you would have all these MBAs coming out of these business schools and thinking, how can we start a school or a chain of schools and like really get market share and really, you know, satisfy customers and you know, drive King Academy out of business or, you know, whatever.
Well, actually, there are schools like that. Among them is Aspire. Yeah, Challenger School and a few others that are founded by market-oriented.
Right, but $10,000 or so dollars per tax dollars per kid being sucked into the, you know, monopoly, you know, state-sponsored system, if that money were turned loose in free market, I mean, just get out of the way. Because, you know, my wife is a separate MBA, and, you know, and her friends, you know, are involved in all these interesting and cool entrepreneurial things, and you never hear any of them talk about, like, let's start a school or let's be a teacher or something. And which is sad, because, you know, I was a teaching assistant in grad school, and it's like the funnest, most rewarding thing. I mean, you know, programming computers are stupid, but kids are, and, you know, our young people are like the smartest, you know, the most advanced system that you can ever, you know, move things
program
around in their head.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, I see, that's, yeah. So,
exactly. Well, now, Chris, one of your T's is teaching, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Elaborate on where are you coming from in this?
Well, that was the whole thing, that it works best when parents and teachers are right there at the decision-making end mm-hmm. of things, and having parents the ability to vote with their feet certainly helps there.
Well, wait a minute. You vote against No Child Left Behind. That's exactly what No Child Left Behind allows, right?
That was limited, though.
It was a massive. It was very limited, and it's a massive. I mean, a little talk like that, but mostly it's a massive increase.
But I mean, it will allow, if your district fails for 3 years, it allows the parents to walk
to another monopoly school.
School. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also,
but the heart of the thing is seen in the national.
Well, that didn't exist before No Child Left Behind, right?
Yeah. The national. I don't know if you've done things on the National Education Association, but those guys have grown as a union, as a powerhouse. They're the largest delegates to the Democrat conventions. They're a big party there. They give 95-97% of their money goes to just huge goes yeah. to Democrat candidates throughout the country, and the goal is to have more control over education centrally, control so that they can get their agenda out and have a pretty wide ranging list of concepts they want to get across, and NASU is completely votes with them 100%. And the thing that caught my attention a few years ago was just the notion of giving the kids in Washington, D.C., whose parents really wanted the voucher, to go to another school outside the district, or even right. to a private school, which Congress gets to send their kids to.
Right.
And she voted no on that. And
well, as I recall, the mayor of Washington, D.C. was begging that, and this is unusual, because he was a liberal Democrat, black guy, and he was begging Congress to allow vouchers.
Well, the kids are black.
I know, and he was saying, we got to do something because this doesn't work anymore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats in Congress were upset.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and somebody put that some Republican stuck that on the budget bill as a little amendment. And mm-hmm. Clinton said he would veto the entire budget
right.
if that was still on there.
So that yeah.
they bowed down and got it. But I think it would have been a better thing to push. But it went
through.
Let
me back up.
But these kids are black.
Yeah.
And where's the heart and passion there? Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to keep. What that said to me is the this NEA thing, control, and the special interest thing is so important that we're going to sacrifice these kids.
Right.
We're going to keep them in their place.
They care more about
So it's like the soft racism that Bush mentioned in the State of the Union.
It looks like pretty hard racism to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in the State of the Union, he mentioned how there was soft racism being practiced among educators.
Low expectations. Yeah, but it's basically, you know, looking at, you know, unionized teachers and, you know, kids in the underclass and saying, well, you know, these people are organized, they vote, they contribute, so they win. It looks from the outside like a pretty clear-eyed, cold-hearted political calculation.
Well, let me ask you about, you did mention that there's an agenda the NEA has. Mm-hmm. How is that agenda promulgated? How do people...
Well, you can get their every year in their convention, in July, they pass resolutions on a wide range of topics, even at the war in Iraq and certainly homeschools and all sorts of political fields there, and it's to get kids used to and accustomed to being compliant members of a government-run state. When the principles of socialism are taught, there's less and less emphasis on our founding fathers and the American principles.
Even more so, I think their agenda is job security, avoiding competitive evaluation, and getting more money for themselves.
That's the selfish agenda, but they've stated a lot more that are what they want to do right there.
Well, they've already taken over kids' soccer because they don't even keep score in AYSO. Kids go out there and play and they don't even keep score. Anyway, okay, guys, that's cool. I apologize. We've got to finish up here. Do you have any other questions for these guys?
I think we've covered it.
Okay. Thank you for making some time.
No, thank you.
That was fun talking with you.
Yeah.
It is interesting. I mean, it'd be interesting if these races were a little closer, then the conversations could be a more mano-a-mano kind of thing. But
yeah, then it would all horse race stuff, you know.
Well, it's easier for us to write about horse race than his issues. Don't you understand that?
Oh, sure.
I mean, issues take several sentences.
Thank you for making time in here, and I hope to see you at some point during the campaign.
No, in 28 days, it's got to...
Are you going to something
tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. There's one at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Yeah.
Brian wants a lot.
Hey, thanks. Mark. Nice talking to you.
Nice to
meet you. Howdy time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.